Hi, I'm Rochelle Jackson. Welcome to The Crime Couch. I'm an investigative journalist and true crime author, and I know who's who in the zoo, the crims, the cops, and the interesting individuals in between. So get comfy and join me each week on The Crime Couch for a rollicking, intriguing tale. It'll be one heck of a journey. Adrian Donoghue was in Victoria Police for 31 years. He was a detective in the Homicide Squad and the head of the Major Crime Squad. And one case that stayed with him was the violent murder of a pregnant woman and her three children some 50 years ago. The man allegedly responsible was an unqualified electrician, Elmer Crawford. After supposedly killing his family, Elmer did a runner and disappeared, never to be found. Well, I'm sitting with Adrian on the crime couch on a humid and wet Melbourne day. Hi, Adrian. Thanks very much for sitting with me on the crime couch today.
Hi, Rochelle. Nice to be here.
Now, tell me, how did this case come across your desk?
Well, I remember we were working an afternoon shift, and at the end of the shift, we went down to the police club and had a drink. And whilst we were there, we got a message from D24 to attend at this address in Glenroy. And that was the start of it all. That was the house where the murders occurred, in Cardinal Road, Glenroy.
So how would you describe this crime?
The worst, one of the worst, I think, that I've ever had to deal with. All murders are bad news, you know, they shouldn't happen. But they're good and bad, you know. And this one was right at the top end of the spectrum. It was probably the worst kind of murder that you could get, where a man's killed his wife and three kids and then tried to dispose of their bodies.
When we've spoken about this before, you described this one as the one that got away. Does it still stick in your claw a bit?
Well, yeah, I don't lose any sleep over it, but I would have loved to have got hold of Elmer and locked him up. And I think, you know, I would love to have seen him pay the penalty for what he did.
How would you describe, Adrian, Elmer Crawford?
Well, I never met the man. He was a pretty cunning individual. He planned these murders very well, and I don't know how long, over what period of time that took place, but he worked out where he was going to dispose of the bodies and how he was going to do it, and he did all those things, but he didn't see the ledge below the cliff when he pushed the car over there. So that's what ruined his plan.
So let's go back to the start. What happened with this crime, and just walk us through it, Adrian?
Well, when we got to the house on the night that we were informed about it, there was evidence there that crime had been committed. There was blood spread around the place and a few other odds and ends, details of which I can no longer remember. But one of my workmates, Frank Coates, and I, we drove down to Port Campbell. The car was on the ledge at Lockhead Gorge, which is just near Port Campbell. And we drove down there, and we slept in the car until daylight. And then we, with the help of the local cliff rescue group down there, we got down onto the ledge where the car was located, and we secured that so it wouldn't slip into the water. And then we proceeded to bring the bodies up that were lying in the back seat, across the back seat. So we'd piled all the bodies, his wife and the three kids, across the back, where the back seat was located, and then pushed them over the cliff. So it was, I don't know how he did it, because it would have been dark when it happened, and there was a little gutter which surrounded the area where the cliff was located, and he had to fill that up with some stones to make a little causeway to get the car across, because otherwise he'd had to drive it across himself, and he wasn't in the car when it went over.
So let's go back. So what do you believe now Elmer did And how did he commit these horrific crimes?
Well, he planned it fairly well over a period of time, I would guess. He made up electric leads with alligator clips on them, and he attached these to each of these victims after he'd knocked them unconscious with a hammer. And he electrocuted them just to make sure that they were dead.
So he basically bashed his own family, his three children and his wife, and then electrocuted them.
Yes, he waited until they were all asleep, and then he went round and with the three kids, he bashed them with a hammer. Just the head wound alone would have killed them. There wouldn't have been any necessity for doing anything else. And he hit his wife over the head with a piece of steel reinforcing rod, which he'd covered in with a bit of plastic hose. I guess so that wouldn't leave any real marks, no blood or anything. And then he took the back seat out of the back swab out of his car, laid the bodies in there, one on top of the other, covered them over with all sorts of odds and ends, and drove down to Lockhead Gorge. And then he's proceeded to make this little causeway across the gutter and push the car over the edge. And it's landed nose first on the ledge. He couldn't see that, of course, and he would have thought that it had gone into the drink. So when a policeman turned up the next morning and knocked on his door, he was there, no doubt, and when he saw who it was, he didn't answer the door. He was there, and he just took off. He was probably there cleaning up the mess, because I've no doubt that had that the car gone in the water, and he wouldn't have found the bodies probably ever. He would have been up the local police station the next day saying, "Oh, my wife shot through, and she's taking the kids with her."
You reckon that was his MO to kind of...
Absolutely. Absolutely. I can't think of any other way that he could do it and get away with it.
So his belief, or what he wanted to do then, Adrian, was to say that this was a murder-suicide. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, if the bodies were ever found, so his wife was still there, although it would have been difficult because he did another silly thing. He attached a piece of hose to the exhaust pipe and then in through the driver's side window and wound the window up on it. So why he did that, I really don't know, because if his wife's lying in the back, dead, with the kids, there's no way she could have driven the car over the edge, is there? So that was something he probably didn't think through, but everything else was pretty carefully and really carefully done. Like, he even got a piece of heavier copper wire and put it in the fuse box so he wouldn't blow the fuses when he turned the switch on the bodies.
So it sounds like it was a very premeditated crime.
Absolutely, yeah. That's the worst part of it. Like, here he is. I don't know why he's done it. We've never ever established a motive why he did this. But that's why he's done it.
That's the really interesting thing, because there was a number of motivations or theories, wasn't there? Like, one was that he and his wife, because Therese was pregnant with the fourth child, that they'd had a dispute and that there was some disagreement about that. And another theory was that apparently there'd been wills drafted up, and that in the event of his family dying, that he would receive a considerable amount of money. Did you hear about those theories?
All that must have emerged after I left the squad and someone else continued on and put the coroner's brief together. But I wasn't there at that particular time. I'd been promoted and moved out. But no, I hadn't heard of that until much later.
When did Elmer's MO about the murder-suicide, when did that theory fall apart?
What, for Elmer? Well, I don't know. As far as we were concerned, it fell apart right from the word go. Like, we couldn't establish any real motive for what he did, but when you look at all the circumstances that he created, that was the obvious one.
I think the thing that really struck me is the fact that he tried to push the car with his family inside in the middle of the night with no light. And I suppose that's when it did fall apart, because the car was supposed to go into the brink, but it didn't do, sorry, into the ocean, wasn't it? But yeah. It didn't do that.
No, it didn't. And that's where he came unstuck, because he somehow got back home that night. I think he had a little motor scooter that I think he might have put on the roof of his car, and that's what he drove home in. He would have been, he got home and I no doubt was cleaning up the mess that he created when he killed them. And when the policeman turned up on the doorstep, that sort of panicked him a bit. And he said to himself, I got to get out of here because, the game is up.
And I believe there were about three people that day that actually saw him at his house, so he definitely had gone back to his property. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, a young girl called by that went to school with his eldest daughter, and they used to go to school together. So she came by in school time, knocked on the door, expecting to go to school with the daughter, and Elmer didn't open the door, but he spoke to her from behind the door.
Do you have any doubt now about who committed these horrendous murders?
None whatsoever. No.
Was there ever any other leads?
No. Didn't need any. All we needed was a lead as to where to find him.
So where did you initially... So you've got these horrific deaths. You've got a murdered woman and you've got the three children also deceased. Where do you start to find someone?
Well, you have to go back, read trace your steps, don't you? You've got to track him down, see what you got to try and figure out what he would do next, or where he might go, or what he might do. Like, is anyone helping him? I guess you just got to sort it all through in your mind as to where would a person go afterwards if he committed a crime of this kind, you see? If he didn't want to be found, or if he did want to be found, he'd want a good reason to explain what happened to the family, the wife and the family. So I think he had that excuse. He had worked all that out. The only trouble was the car didn't go in the water and the bodies were found. And a neighbour's kid came along and knocked on the door and found him at home. So his little game was up right from the word go.
Adrian, one of the things that you have to do often when you're investigating homicides like this is to do a reenactment. Was this done with the Elmer Crawford case?
Yes, we did do a reenactment. Not of the actual crime itself, but of the disposing of the car over the cliff edge.
Okay, so tell me, what did you do?
Well, we thought that the coroner would want to know what happened to Elmer Crawford. Did he go over the cliff in the car, or what happened? Did he just throw himself in the water, or what? So we thought we would do a reenactment. So we got hold of a motor car, the same make and model as his, and we loaded it up with store dummies, filled with sand to imitate the weight of the bodies that were in there. Put all the junk back that he had in the car and covering the bodies, and then we pushed that car over the edge and filmed it in slow motion and normal speed. And the object of it was, of course, to see if Elmer Crawford could have been driving that car over the edge, and when the car hit the ledge, was he thrown out, and did he go in the water?
Did he jump out?
Did he jump out? Whatever happened? So it turned out that the car we put over there landed on the ledge only 18 inches from where his car landed. It was uncanny.
Incredible. And what else did that prove?
Well, it proved that, the car sort of did a half turn as it went over the cliff, so that the roof was facing the cliff face. So if Elmer Crawford had driven the car over there, he would have, and had got thrown out through the windscreen or whatever, he would have been thrown towards the cliff face Well, that didn't find Elmer there, so he wasn't in the car, and that would have been sufficient to satisfy the coroner that he wasn't in the car when he went over. So he didn't commit suicide after the event.
I suppose it also proved, Adrian, that his theory of what he was doing with the bodies and how he was going to turf the car off the cliff and head it into the ocean was completely flawed, wasn't it? The plan was.
Well, if it had happened the way he wanted it, we wouldn't have known. We wouldn't have known where they were, because the car would have gone into the drink and the bodies with it, and probably never to be found.
But that didn't occur.
That didn't occur, no.
So was the coroner satisfied with the reenactment?
Absolutely. And the coroner issued a warrant for Kelmer's arrest. Still filed away in the police archives.
And the rest, as they say, is history.
Is history, yeah.
Being in the homicide squad, you investigate murders every day. So where does this case sit for you in terms of working at the homicide squad? Was it just another case, or was it something more significant?
Oh, no, I think I'd have to say this is the worst case of murder, multiple murders, that I ever had to deal with, mainly because of, you know, the circumstances that surrounded it. Like a father killing his wife and three kids and then dumping their bodies in the water, in the ocean, never to be found again. That's what he wanted to happen.
And I think the other thing that strikes me is just how unconscionable it was.
It was indeed, yeah. No conscience whatsoever. No, just terribly brutal, highly planned activity, you know, exercise on Elmer's part. And no, it was just a terrible murder, yeah.
When you look at it, Adrian, did you work out, had Elmer ever had priors? Had he had any sort of history of violence or anything like that in his history?
No, nothing. Nothing that that I can recall ever having. No, he was a clean skin, and there was no history that you could go back onto to guide you as to what his motive might have been. He wasn't a violent man, from all we could gather, up till that point in time.
So I noticed that there'd been several leads for some time. Can you tell me what those leads were?
Well, there was a couple of reports of him being seen in Western Australia, a couple of homicide detectives went over there and traced those leads down, but unfortunately didn't come to anything. There was also another one where a man in Texas, I think it was in America, was found died of a heart attack, and they couldn't identify him, and he had a lot of features and that about that would fit Elmer's description. And he had a number of aliases, and the police over in America couldn't identify him in the end. So they had a look at this bloke and thought, oh, well, you know, he matches Elmer. There's a lot of things about him. So they did all that. The experts got onto it, the facial recognition people and all the rest of it, and they drew a police artist's impression of what Elmer would have looked like at that particular point in time. They would have been about 80 or so when that portrait was drawn. And unfortunately, when we got hold of some DNA, it sort of knocked that one out. So that fellow over there was not Elmer Crawford.
So there was a body found in 2005 in Texas, and I believe it was quite difficult to actually try and find someone who shared Elmer's DNA. Was that right?
Couldn't find anybody. We never had anyone here at that time, because at that particular point in our history, we didn't have DNA. That wasn't available to us. But we did keep some DNA, some what turned out to be DNA from him, and we couldn't find any one of Elmer's relatives that we could contact to get a sample of their DNA and compare it.
So what did you do?
I think we advertised. Advertised in the media somehow, I think. And we wanted any relative of Elmer Crawford to come and see us, which they did in the end. And they managed to get some DNA off him to match it to the DNA that we had for this man in America.
Must have been pretty similar for someone in America to be cited as being similar. Do you remember some of the similarities?
Oh, well, I could tell you what they are, but I'd have to look it up because I can't remember them all. But there was his facial features, the same build, the same height, the same colouring. And the age too would have been about the same age if Elmer was still alive.
What a coincidence.
Yeah, it was.
But it wasn't him.
No, but I bet the detectives at the time were rubbing their hands and saying, oh, good, we've found Elmer after all. But it wasn't to be, unfortunately.
Did anyone manage to do the big trip over to Texas?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
There would have been some fights about that.
There would have been lots of fights, yeah.
Okay, so in 2008, Adrian, the Homicide Squad and Victoria Police announced a $100,000 reward that was offered. Now, with rewards, I know there automatically is more interest in the case. Were any of the leads then useful?
Not that I'm aware of, because I was out of it by then, well and truly. So I don't know. The cold case crew at the Homicide Squad then would have been making the inquiries. But it's interesting that only last year I had a phone call here at home from an Irishman.
Right.
From Dublin.
Right. And what did he say?
He said, oh, I think I've seen Elmer Crawford. I said, Elmer, how would you know Elmer Crawford? Apparently there was some program over there where Elmer Crawford was featured.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, he said, if you come over, I could show you where he is. I said, well, look, mate, I'm not in the job anymore. So I'll have to ring the Homicide Squad now, and they'll get in touch with you, which they did. And all he was interested in was a reward, because apparently they advertised the reward on this program that he saw.
Right.
So we knew there was a reward available. So quite a substantial one, I'm sure, for a bloke like him. Anyway, he rang me a couple more times.
He rang you a couple of more
times?
A
couple more times.
What, seeing Elmer again?
Yeah, he said, when are you coming over? You know, you're going to miss him if you don't. But anyway, I convinced him that I wasn't the man to be contacting anymore, that you'd already been contacted by the Homicide Squad. Get in touch with them. But they weren't at all excited about his information.
Well, see, that's the thing, isn't it? When you announce rewards like this, you often get all forms of information coming through, and a lot of them aren't particularly relevant or useful.
Well, that's true, but some of them are. And it's the ones that are that you really want to foster.
So when you initially spoke to this Irishman, did you immediately think, oh, my goodness, he's obviously cited Elmer?
No. No. I wouldn't have been that sure that he'd actually seen Elmer, because I wouldn't know what Elmer looked like. So whether or not, I don't know, I didn't see this program that he's talking about, which was aired over in Dublin. But because Elmer was an Irishman and lived most of his life there, I guess that was the interest that they had over there, that someone from a foreign country had committed this dreadful crime and disappeared, you know. So they probably picked it up on the airwaves from Australia or something like that. But no, he was just looking after himself.
And he managed to get your home number.
I don't know how he got that. I really don't. Not a bad detective himself to get that.
He's not going to get any reward for that, though.
No.
So Adrian, if Elmer was alive today, he'd be around 90 years of age. What do you think? Is your hunch and intuition that he's still alive?
I think on the balance of probabilities, he'd be dead. Like, he'd be 91 or something like that now. And how many people live beyond that? Not too many. No, I think that he's probably dead. Don't know where he is or where they buried him. Maybe they haven't.
See, that's the thing, isn't it? Like, is it easy for someone, say, 50 years ago to disappear?
Oh, yeah, easily. Australia's a big country, and there's lots of places here that you can go to, and no one asks any questions about who you are or what you, why you're there. So it's easy enough to disappear, and he did a good job of doing that. He really did.
The thing that I find fascinating is I've just done a story on missing persons, and there's about, to date, 500 unidentified bodies in the morgue around Australia. Is there a possibility that Elmer's one of them?
Unlikely, I would say. Unlikely, because, you know, if there was any similarities between any dead body and Elmer, because they do, they check them out pretty thoroughly, I think. I don't know what the missing persons do exactly, or how far they go with looking, trying to find missing people. But I'd say that, depending on the circumstances, any dead body that is discovered would be police would try to identify them. So they'd go about all the things that they do and to do that. So DNA is one thing now, of course. It's a wonderful tool that they've got. Fingerprints, photos, you name it, all the sorts of things that would help you identify somebody. That's what the police do now.
So, Adrian, do you think the Homicide Squad are still fairly positive that they can clear up this cold case?
Well, it's open. I know that it's still open. I don't think they're not working on it at the present time because they haven't got any information to go on. So if someone could, like that Irishman, can ring in and tell us that Elmer's living in such and such a place, that'd be wonderful. I'm sure they'd knock on the door just to make sure.
So 50 years on, what stays with you today about the case, Adrian?
Oh, I think it's just the absolute brutality of it, callous brutality, without any justification whatsoever that we know of. So what went on in his mind, who knows? But it was just a dreadful, dreadful series of murders.
It's hard to believe what could motivate a 41-year-old man to do such horrific things to his own family.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like it's just outrageous, isn't it? It's not the sort of thing any individual person would even think about doing, you know. No, it was just a horrible, horrible series of murders.
Well, thank you very much for talking to me about a case that stayed with you. Do you still refer to it as the one that got away?
Well, I do, yeah, if I'm asked about it. That's great. It is the one that got away. It would have been great to capture Elmer and put him before the court.
Well, thanks very much for sitting with me on the Crime Couch today, Adrian.
You're most welcome.
Thanks for joining me. I'm Rochelle Jackson, and I look forward to your company next time on the Crime Couch.